Separated by cosmic cabinets, Brandon, Paul, and Logan are broadcasting Nintendo stuff live using their telepathic powers. My name is Brandon Miracle, broadcasting from the Break Room Arcade. If you look south of me in the video version, you'll see Paul Anderson broadcasting from...
the Amiibo Factory?
Woo!
I thought...
yeah.
You're the one that came up with it, man.
I don't know. I just wanted to throw it in your corner and see what would happen.
Confusion. A lot of confusion.
Well, at least we tried.
Yeah.
If you look to the right of me in the video version, you'll see Logan Welliver in his Pokemon shirt.
Yeah, this is a Pokemon shirt. It's got all the Gen 1 starters plus Pikachu. That looks real good.
I want to point out the fact that I'm wearing a Mario shirt, Logan's wearing a Pokemon shirt, and Paul's wearing a Sega shirt. So we're all video game themed today.
Wow.
It's like almost like we do this for a living. Yeah.
This is like the one video game
shirt I
have. I
might like video
games.
What? You both talked at the same time.
Logan, you first.
Oh, I said I might like video games.
I said that this is like the one video game shirt I own now. Thank you,
E3. Really?
I have my Captain Falcon shirt, and then there's probably like one or two others floating in my closet, but like they're in the way back. This is the one that fits me. The only one that fits me.
You know, speaking of E3, Paul, we didn't have you last week. Why don't you give us a little bit about how you felt on our little trip?
Felt real cool. I got to do the thing in LA. It was the first time ever like going anywhere. First time on a plane, first time Ubering, first like major convention. So, I mean, most of my memories right now are just like waiting in line to play games.
A lot of
more
that.
Memorable than like actually like the demos, but it was still a blast.
Yeah, I mean, we met a lot of cool people in line.
Oh yeah, there was, I'm just gonna call him Eggman because I don't remember what his name was, but he had like that really great stash, and he really did look like
Eggman though. Yeah.
I thought I didn't want to say it while like you guys were playing the demo, but like he chose Eggman and I just thought it was too perfect because he was also like really tall too, so it was just the perfect storm.
I wish we had gotten a photo with him so we can like prove that this man exists, because he was like the embodiment of Eggman in real life.
But like a really chill, like really cool dude.
Yeah,
if Eggman was like someone you just want to like grab a beer with after work.
There's like some episodes of Sonic Boom where I could say that about Eggman, man, but it's not consistent enough.
Oh, that's disappointing.
And then there was Jody in the Pokemon line.
Yeah, shout out to Jody.
She followed us on Twitter.
We're friends.
Yeah.
Let's see what else was there. best booth for me though was hands down that Borderlands. All that swag they gave out was just...
they gave out so much free stuff.
I don't even know how. I don't know what they were doing, but like they came ready.
There was the mask, like several posters that came in a nice envelope.
The bag. I just wanted the bag. I didn't think I'd get all this other stuff with it. I think the funny thing about that is I went back towards like the end of the last day and they were just handing out the folder with the posters. So like that was it. So I guess we got in there at the right time.
Oh, okay. They didn't have any masks left?
They might have like, well, you get that when you like first get in the line. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they were still handing those out, but like the people
that
finished the demo, they were just handing out the folder.
Oh, okay. But the folder had like three or four posters in it too.
I think it was more than that. There were a lot of posters in there.
And it's all really good art. And funny art too in some cases. Yeah. I think there's the one where he's like opening his face and inside of his face is him opening his face again. And it just keeps going. Yeah. No, that was really fun. We got to hang out with some good friends of ours. It was just a good time.
Yeah.
And I hate to turn things from a good time to a somber time, but I would be remiss if we didn't talk about this a little bit. So Desmond Amofa, otherwise known as Etika on the internet, was reported deceased by the New York Police Department last week. He had been missing for 6 days after uploading a very troubling video to his YouTube channel. It was about 8 minutes long of him basically saying that he was sorry to everyone for everything that he had done, apologized to a few specific people, and definitely just made it sound like there was no choice but to end his life to apologize for those things. So the video ends, and then no one heard from him for days. They found his body in the river. He had jumped off the Manhattan Bridge. There's currently a memorial there with a bunch of posters, things that Etika liked, Joy-Con boys, those kinds of things to remember him by. And the reason I want to bring this up is because Etika had been going through some deeply troubling mental episodes, like publicly on his Twitter feed, and there was a lot of people who were scared, myself included, and a lot of people that were calling him a clown and, you know, doing that kind of thing. And if someone is doing that on Twitter and making such ridiculous statements and saying things like that, obviously there's something wrong and they need help. The last thing we should be doing is making them feel like they don't belong anymore, or that what they did was so gravely wrong that they can't be, you know, they can't be forgiven. Because ultimately, it seems like that's what led Etika to decide that there was no other way out. And we don't want people to feel that way. We have three people on this podcast who struggle with mental health problems. Two of them are medicated for it. It's a real thing, and we need to take it seriously. That's mostly what I wanted to say. And I also wanted to say rest in peace to Etika, because I was a fan of his. And we know we're friends with people who were, you know, close friends with him. And I want to share my condolences with them, to Etika's family, because it's going to be difficult for a while. And that's, I think I've said my piece. If you guys want to add anything, feel free.
Yeah, I mean, I was never, like, super, super into Etika. Obviously, he was always, like, there. Like, always, you know, memes popping up in the feed and such. I never really had, like, a bad opinion of Etika. I knew he was, you know, spontaneous and a little bit reckless. And but, you know, all in all, it's like, it's just unfortunate that it came to this, you know, that it's unfortunate that it ever, you know, gets to this point. And I don't think you're ever going to be able to stop the trolls. But certainly, like, hopefully people, you know, take their time to reflect and hopefully this can be avoided more often than not. You're not always going to be able to stop it. You're not always going to be able to, you know, save people. And it's sad. And I just hope that, you know, I think the one thing I would say about it is all the people who kind of seem like they're taking advantage of the situation for popularity. I've seen a few moments like, you know, if there's anything, like, keep those people and hold those people on account, because those people don't care. You know, they'll act like they care and they'll show that, oh, this is sad and stuff like that, but ultimately they're in it for themselves, and that's not good. That's partially why I haven't said anything publicly about it, partially because, one, I wasn't, like, the biggest fan. It wasn't like I was constantly keeping up with Etika. And then, two, like, you know, if anybody, like, I don't know, I just didn't feel the need to say much outside of, like, you know, I'm sad that he's gone, because it's never fun to see that kind of stuff happen. And I guess anything outside of that is, I'm glad that I kind of started on the route that I am on personally, with medicating myself. I'm still, like, in the first week of the medication, and it's been really weird. But certainly I'm glad that I have people in my life, you know, keeping me accountable and pushing me to do things that are good for me long term.
Anything from you, Paul?
I didn't really, like Logan, I didn't really watch Etika all that much, but, like, this is just such a sad and unfortunate series of events that have unfolded. You know, you gotta watch out for your content creators. You gotta try and be nice to them. You know, they don't make for themselves, they make for you. They're trying to, you know, share just a little bit of joy into your life, bring that into your life. And, like, even though I didn't really watch Etika all that much, you know, I'm still feeling the impact of this. It still hurts, and it feels like there's just, like, this hole in the internet now.
Yeah.
So if you're struggling, you know, please reach out to people. You know, just start that conversation. Yeah. Hasn't been a fun week.
No, for sure not. It'll take a while, I think, before the community kind of heals from this event, but at the same time, hopefully it also serves as a reminder, like Paul said, that we gotta take care of people, especially these people who are in the public eye all the time. Mm-hmm. Etika pointed out the social media being a big factor that kind of hurt him in the long run. And he was also someone who definitely, like, you know, fed off of it. It was part of his energy, and, you know, it was fun for him. And you got to be careful, I guess, is what he wants people to remember.
Yeah. Gotta say, though, like, with him, it wouldn't feel like, it wouldn't hurt the community so much if he wasn't such a great person.
Yeah.
I think, like, just the pain that lingers after this speaks a lot to just how wonderful he was.
For sure. And it seems to me like all the people that were clowning him and, you know, insulting him and all that stuff before this happened, it seems like the majority of that has been drowned out by the overwhelming support that he's getting, at least from what I see on Twitter and on YouTube. So I think he's going to be remembered in the correct light. And, like, even for you guys who weren't, you know, the biggest fans, even you recognize, like, what his place in the community was. And I'm not going to mention, like, specifically where I work, but my TV station is a local station in the northern Illinois area. And even we posted about it on our Facebook page. I was just scrolling through at work and I saw that, and I was a astounded that it had reached that far. So I think that definitely proves like how much Etika meant to people. And hopefully that warning that he left us with reaches as many people as possible. My final words for you, Etika, is we love you. We hope that you found peace, and thank you for all the laughs that you gave us over the years. And on that note, we're going to move on to the actual news from Nintendo this week, including one that I've been super excited about, being Super Mario Maker 2 is officially out, and I've been playing it. Maybe a lot. Maybe a whole lot.
Define a whole lot for us.
I 100%ed story mode within 12 hours of launch.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot.
So I finished building the castle. I played every single level that Nintendo made, and I guess that's a good place to start. I am really impressed with Nintendo's actual levels that they developed for the game. They did this with Super Mario Maker 1, but the levels were kind of easy and easygoing. They were more just, hey, here's some of the things you can do in Super Mario Maker, and they would throw them at you with no context. This is designed around the idea that you're going to collect coins and do jobs being the courses, and use those coins to help build the castle. And as you build the castle, more jobs come in, more characters start visiting the Mushroom Kingdom, and they'll have jobs for you too. And that helps you collect more coins to build into the castle. You unlock outfits for your maker profile.
Fashion!
Course world. Yeah, it's just a really cool setup that really motivated me to go through those levels. In the case of Super Mario Maker 1, my motivation for going through all the levels was unlocking the mushroom equipped, or the mushroom item you get for beating all of it, and after I did it, I never thought about it again.
Yeah, I'm actually drawing like a lot of inspiration from seeing like how they design their levels, and like they're all really well crafted. I know you mentioned like in the first game those levels were like easy. Some of these are frustrating. Like I've had to like set my controller down a couple different times.
they rank them by difficulty too, with a star ranking. So you already have an idea before you start playing the stage if it's going to really give you trouble or not, which I think is kind of nice.
If you need to take deep breaths. It's going to be okay. Sunshine, hugs.
Yeah, you've played New Super Mario Bros. Wii. We played through that game together. New Super Mario Bros. U, New Super Mario Bros. DS. They used that level design philosophy that they've been using in all of those games to craft the stages that they built in this game, where they introduce an idea in a setting where you can fail and you won't die for it. And then, after you've done that, they give you that same obstacle, that same idea in a place where there is actual risk, and they start evolving that idea over the course of the stage, ultimately culminating in one final challenge that then leads you to the flagpole. And they've been doing that over and over again in the story mode, and it's just like pure level design genius from these people who have been doing it for so long. Like, they know exactly what makes a good stage. One of the problems that plagued Super Mario Maker 1, at least in my opinion, was that people would just throw enemies out there and just so much hard stuff that isn't necessarily designed. It's just there to make it difficult. Mm-hmm. But Nintendo knows like how to strike that balance. Even on the stages that they label as full 4-star difficulty, they know when enough is enough. They know, like, in certain instances you need to reward the player. And that's one of the things I wanted to do in my stage was, if you do something difficult, I want there to be more of a reward, or there should be more of a reward than just completing the stage. Oh, there's a 30 coin here that I can pick up. That makes me feel good, because I'm one of the people who got to do that. And you just see that design all over their stages. And what's so cool about it in the context of story mode is that when you find those secrets, it's motivating because the coins you collect go back into the castle.
Actually, like, with that, I spend more time in each stage collecting coins during the story mode than I do, like, when I'm just playing levels online. Because there it feels like it's kind of inconsequential to get the coins.
Right.
They kind of, like, more help me, like, track where I should be going or, like, hint at things. But, like, in the story mode, oh, I want that 10 coin. I need that. And so I'll, like, go out of my way to get it. But I think the interesting thing with, like, how you're talking about how, like, you can see their, like, design philosophy in these stages. You mentioned last night the tutorials and how good those were and how charming they are. But, like, there's a lot of really great information in those tutorials. Like, I've been playing through, I think I did, like, all the, like, beginner ones. Mm-hmm. And, like, kind of how you're talking about, like, not throwing unexpected, like, super difficult things just for the, you know, heck of it.
Yeah.
Giving, like, that time for the player to learn the concept and then ramping up the difficulty later. Like, that's something that they touch on in that. It's really impressive.
Yeah, and there's, like 45 tutorials in there. Like, 15 beginner, 15 intermediate, and 15 advanced. Like, yep. they really take the time to explain to you what makes a stage good.
Teach me Tendo.
They call it Yamamura's Dojo, which I think is kind of cute.
They're like, I love listening, like just reading through that because it's just entertaining on top of it. Like you get good information, but like the dialogue between, I think it's him and Nina.
I think so, yeah.
Like it's entertaining.
And for those of you at home who don't know, Yamamura is a pigeon in the context of Super Mario Maker 2. A pigeon is teaching you how to create levels in Super Mario Maker.
He just like coos, and then they put in parentheses what he said. They do that with Undo Dog too, which I love. I love talking to Undo Dog.
He barks.
Bark, bark. I have a job for you.
after you beat everything in the single player or the story mode, if you talk to Undo Dog, he'll charge you $100. He'll charge you 100 coins to tell you a joke.
I love that.
It's the only thing left to spend coins on, and I find it to actually be worth it.
Undo Dog is like the hidden gem of this game.
He really is.
The first thing I did when I started playing and I saw him was I tweeted at Can You Pet the Dog, asking if you can pet Undo Dog, because that's all I need to know.
There was that follow-up tweet that you sent me, too.
I found that in the reply, because they made a stage where you pet the dog by like pressing like the switch, mm-hmm. and like it'd move a hand, and someone in the comments like, you can pet Undo Dog, and he just like taps the icon for Undo Dog in like the level creator.
It's a roundabout way, but it works.
Yep, I'll take it. And it's more hands-on too. Like, I'd rather pet him myself than make Mario pet him.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's tactile. So I'm someone, obviously, who's played Super Mario Maker 1, but Paul,
I own it.
You do. I do want to get your perspective, though, on Super Mario Maker 2 as someone who's new to the series.
Well, so far, like, I've been kind of afraid to, like, dive into the level creator. I've goofed off with it, but, like, I'm trying to, like, ease into it. And so I've, like, experimented with, like, ideas that I've had, but it's taken me a while to kind of get used to, like, the layout. And, like, I remember doing the initial tutorial for it and not knowing how to even get to all the different tools. It's like, oh, hey, I need to press the D-pad. Now I can navigate this. But there's just, like, a lot of options. And so it's a bit overwhelming trying to like figure out like how it all works and mm-hmm. how to get used to it, but I started like playing through the tutorials and I'm kind of getting it down now.
Yeah, I mean,
but
there is a lot there. It's a very powerful maker, so yeah. There's a lot to experiment with. They take a different approach than they did with Super Mario Maker 1, because in the first game they didn't give you everything right away. You had to earn the parts by playing with the ones you had.
Yeah, which interesting choice.
In some ways it was a nice approach, and in other ways I was just there like scrubbing my finger on the gamepad just trying to unlock stuff because I wanted to play with everything. Mm-hmm. Like, Super Mario World is my favorite 2D Mario game, and that wasn't available to me at the beginning of the game, and that was more frustrating than anything else.
Oh, that's one other thing, like trying to remember all the different mechanics for the different styles. Like, oh, I want to make the player do like the spin to sustain themselves. Well, Mario's just spinning now. He's just spinning. I would be like in like the 3D world instead of like the new Super Mario Brothers style, and mm-hmm. like when you press R, he just spins and keeps spinning. He doesn't stop.
Yeah. I mean, that one gives you a little bit of lift, but not in the same way that it does in New Super Mario Bros. U.
Yeah. And so it's like throwing me off, like trying to remember how each game plays. But I mean, it's not a bad thing that there's five styles. It's just impressive.
Yeah. And if you go to Yamamura's Dojo, there's a section that explains all of Mario's moves in the mm-hmm. five different games. So if you ever need a reminder, it's all written down in there too.
The one thing it doesn't tell you is like what items are available. Like I'll be looking for a certain enemy type or a certain like power up. It's like, oh yeah, I'm in the wrong game again.
At least in the case of like the main four, you can switch freely between them and, you know, your course will stay the same. The problem is like if you switch to 3D world, it deletes everything you worked on.
Yep, good times, right?
I mean, at least it has the foresight to warn you first, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, maybe I don't want to do that. But yeah, I think 3D world is like both really great, because I love it, from a gameplay standpoint and design standpoint. There's so much cool stuff you can do with it, but it doesn't have parity with the other four styles. So if I start working on a stage or a course and I realize that I wanted to do something that's only available in 3D world, I have to start from scratch.
Yeah. Also, it throws me off sometimes when I like go into the maker and there's already like a level laid out.
Oh, like auto-generate something?
Yeah. I both like that and don't like that.
What I'll do is I'll go to the course bot and click on an empty slot, and then I'll click the button that's like make from this unsaved data, and then it'll give you a fresh one, and you'll know for sure that it's not saving over anything you've worked on already.
Good to know.
So definitely be careful with that. excuse me. So I've played a little bit of online. I don't know if you have yet, Paul.
No, I haven't. Just played some courses and like downloaded some stuff.
So I played online for the first time last night in both the multiplayer co-op and the multiplayer versus. And I have a lot of things to say about this. One is that sometimes the online is incredible. There's no lag, no input delay. It just feels the way you would expect it to, like if you were playing locally. And that's fantastic. Other times, it's worse than Super Smash Bros. Brawl.
Wow. That's really saying something.
It can be bad. Like, so before you start the level, it like counts down from 3 seconds, and you and the other three players are like stuck in this invisible box. Mm. You can tell right away in that segment if it's going to be a bad time, because it'll just be a slideshow presentation, sometimes with several seconds in between each individual frame of data.
Yikes.
But the problem is, like, it's obviously it's not like server based, it's peer to peer, because, you know, it just makes sense for this kind of game. And that just comes with its own problems. There's no way to like back out of a match if it's already going and it's bad. You're just stuck until someone finishes the level. Also,
what fresh hell is this?
I know, right? Also, when you're queuing up with someone or queuing up with people, it'll tell you, it'll give you a little indicator of how good the connection is, but it doesn't give you an option to deny the queue up. So, like, if you see that it's bad, you can't say no. You just get put into it.
Wow.
You're given an expectation of what experience you're just about to get.
Yeah. One thing I'm really impressed with Mario Tennis Aces is that they updated it post-launch so that you can see that, but then also give you the option to accept or deny the match once you've seen what the connection strength will be. That's so good. Why can't I have that here?
I mean, to be fair, can you play with friends online yet? I'm just saying, like, they're not done with it yet, so I'm sure hopefully that's something that, like, they'll fix later.
I would hope so, because online versus is, I was not expecting it to be as much fun as it is. It's really fun. Just like the interactions that happen between the four players while one of them is just desperately trying to make it to the flagpole is super funny. Like, you'll see people play pranks on each other, they like throw Koopa shells at one another. It's so good. Like, there's this fan game I used to play called Super Mario War, which takes place in, like, the Super Mario Brothers 3 style, and you're all in a single screen setup, and it's basically a battle royale. You have a certain amount of lives, there's power-ups and stuff. It feels like that, but, like, in a proper Mario Brothers context, where the goal is to actually win. It's super good, and some of the level designs that people are coming up with specifically for multiplayer are fantastic. There was one, I uploaded this one to Twitter, actually, where you had to collect 11 coins before the flagpole would appear. So there's just a bunch of singular platforms and a lot of altitude that just have a single coin on them. So the four of us ran off, and since there's so many different pathways to take, we all went in different directions. But at the end, Toadette is running up towards the goal, but I'm way up here. I grab a coin midair. Happens to be the 11th coin, by the way. It gives you a question mark on the indicator so you don't know where you're at in progress, which is a really good idea. But I grab it. It happens to be the 11th coin, and the flagpole appears. I fly down, run right into the goal right as Toadette's about to pass it, and she just stops in her tracks. I get the victory animation.
It's priceless.
It's so funny. And this, it just results in like this deadpan stare between me and Toadette where it's like I give the proverbial middle finger. Because she could not see me where I was, because I came out of the sky. I literally flew in from nowhere.
You fall down into it.
Yeah, and fell into it. It's so good. That's the kind of experience you can have in online versus. It's really good. That's why I just wish that there were a couple other features there to make the experience a little better, because I could see myself playing a whole lot of this mode. Because it's a endless grab bag. You never know what you're going to get. You don't know what kind of players you're going to get. You know what kind of stage you're going to get. Mm-hmm. It's always different, and that makes it really fun.
With like co-op with this, you just sort of like sparked a memory. We were trying out like one of those, like, was it super difficult or what's the highest
super
difficulty?
Expert
super expert stage that I had downloaded. I was playing through it and my girlfriend was over, and so I hand her the controller, and this is like a like precision platforming level.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like having a blast just getting our butts handed to us by the stage over and over again, because it wasn't even like meant to be co-op, but it was still like it was fun like trying to work with her to figure out how we do it together and do it. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. without like stepping on each other's toes. And I think at one point she mentioned like we had played through New Super Mario Bros. U together, but we had more fun doing it here in this context than we did there without it even being like intentional.
There's less pressure mm-hmm. to beat a stage in Mario Maker 2, and I think that helps as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one level. Like, I don't care if I lose. I just want to have a good time. Yeah, just like messing around, even if you're playing co-op, throwing each other off the edges of the stage is fun. Because there's no penalty. You just respawn and whatever.
It hurts their pride a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I do want to mention, I played co-op online too, and it works a little bit differently than I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So if one person finishes the course, everybody wins. You know, that's
Yay.
I expect that. But if you die, you're given the option to respawn at the beginning of the stage at the most recent Ooh. Checkpoint that you've crossed, or you can respawn on another player.
Huh,
so they make it so that people who are, you know, maybe not as good at Mario games, if they die, they can just respawn at the player who's in the lead so that they can, you know, still be involved. It's a good idea. I really like it.
Let me ask you, with like the online co-op, the camera follows you and not like shared between all the players, right?
Right. The camera is independent.
Well, we were playing locally. We had like several occasions, like the stage we were on, you press like the button, all the coins turn to like platform. You have to run to the next like switch and keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like fall and it'd follow me instead of like stay with her who's on a safe platform. So the camera would move past like the box and like kill her. And then I'd finish falling to my death and kill me. And it's like, this, I don't think this was very well thought through, but it like kept doing that to like both of us. There were times like she'd fall and kill me and then kill her.
So when you're playing locally, you're still not bound by the camera?
We're still like, we share the camera when we're playing locally. So like, that's why it'd kill me, because it, like the camera would follow her. And so I'd be like offside, die. And then she'd die.
Okay, so like, it's not like New Super Mario Brothers, where like if you were all the way on the far left, the camera would just stop. It keeps going and lets you die.
Yep.
Okay, now I got it.
That's why I'm like, I don't know how well it's thought through. Because it's just like, it always followed the wrong person.
They need to offer a button that lets you give the camera priority to, like, if you can throw it to the other person.
That'd
be kind of nice. Yeah.
Help a lot. But I mean, we got a good chuckle out of it, at least.
Good. Yeah, that's the thing with Super Mario Maker 2, is it's just pure fun, just silly fun. And it's been a long time since I've played a game that's kind of designed around just silly fun, and I'm here for it. I even playing with strangers is an absolute blast. I was not expecting it to be as fun as it is.
I'll give that a try later.
Yeah, it's just super goofy, because you can message each other, like, the shout-out messages, like the ones in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
I'm using tilt controls.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So there's a little bit of that going on, and that can be funny. Like, if I kill someone and then I say, sorry, but I'm not really sorry, you know?
Oh, you're saying it just to, like, rub it in?
Yeah.
I feel
you.
Yeah,
it's a good time. I saw a clip on Twitter. It was in Super Mario World, and there's this obstacle where the person had to jump on a Yoshi, jump off the edge, and then jump off of Yoshi to get to the other side, because there was, like, this platform that blocked the way in between mm-hmm. the two jumps. All four players are playing. Three of them go through, and then it's just Mario left on the left side. The two others go into the pipe, but Toad stays there waiting for Mario to show up. And he's, like, jumping in and cheering him on. So Mario jumps on Yoshi, jumps off the platform, jumps off of Yoshi to jump up, and Toad jumps up and bounces on his head so that he gets sent back down and dies. And then Toad walks away and starts teabagging and then goes in the pipe. And I'm like, they were playing co-op, but he just did it to be a jerk. I love it.
Amazing.
So if it's not clear already, I really like Super Mario Maker 2. It was well worth the wait.
It is just a fun, pure experience.
Yeah. And I know, Logan, you haven't gotten to play it yet, so you haven't had a lot of input here, but what are your thoughts on what you're hearing, at least?
I mean, it makes me really sad that I'm really poor right now and that I can't afford it. That being said, quick flex, I will be going home earlier and trying out and playing VR, trying out a Valve Index, and then playing VR with my brothers. So I have that, right? You guys have Mario Maker 2. I have VR Valve Index.
I don't have that Labo VR that I still haven't assembled, just sitting there.
I built my Labo VR, and it wasn't long after I built it that I bought Brandon's Vive off of him. I was like, oh no, this is like a taste of like, oh, I need real VR. So
So in other news regarding Super Mario Maker 2, it's currently been discovered that you can only upload 32 levels max. In the original Super Mario Maker, you could upload 10, and then when you got enough medals, you could upload more, eventually capping out at 100 stages that you could upload. So this works a little bit differently. That said, this could change with updates. I don't anticipate it's just going to stay at 32, so I wouldn't worry about this too much. Moving on from Super Mario Maker, Nintendo is talking about expanding their Nintendo Switch Online games library.
This is the most Nintendo response.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's so it reads, while I can't give any new information about further classic hardware, etc. here, we are thinking about expanding the NES software lineup on the online service and other ways of providing them. We understand your desire to play past products. That's all they said.
So Nintendo of them.
Yeah. I mean, I still anticipate that some other game systems will arrive, but clearly that's not the priority right now. Or maybe it is. We don't really know. For all we know, they've already been working on it, and, you know, it's just not time to release it yet.
Yeah, I'm imagining that, like, it'll be a while before we, like, at least anything, like, recent, like, N64 GameCube.
Yeah.
It'll be a minute still, but, like, I'm anticipating, like, SNES will hear eventually, maybe.
Maybe even this year.
I hope. Exactly.
I'm wondering if they might time this with the release of whatever the Switch Pro model ends up being. Because I remember, like, with the 3DS, they couldn't get Super Nintendo games running on the original version, but if you had the new Nintendo 3DS, then you had access to the SNES game library. I don't think the Switch will have problem playing SNES games, but I'm talking more like GameCube type stuff.
Right.
Because GameCube, from what I understand, is very difficult to emulate, or it takes a lot of extra processing power. I'm not the biggest expert on emulation, but I know it would be a hurdle.
Right.
So maybe that's why we haven't heard much recently.
Right.
I also hope that those two Switch revisions are on the way soon. I really want to see what they got going on with those.
Take my money, please.
I would imagine that they would wait until, like, there's, like, a healthy amount of software that could utilize the improved tech.
Breath, like, of the Wild 2.
Well, Breath of the Wild 2, maybe, like, various updates to past games.
Breath of the Wild 1.
Smash Bros.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
I mean, even Mario Odyssey could stand to be upgraded, because that uses dynamic resolution, which doesn't always look the greatest. So, I mean, there are a lot of past games already that could definitely stand the extra horsepower. But I think you're
also
right.
A lot of third-party games that are running at really low resolutions.
Witcher 3 at 540p in handheld mode?
Yeah, no kidding.
I think it's still 720 docked, but it doesn't look great.
It doesn't look great. It doesn't look great.
Here's a story I thought was kind of interesting. Nintendo says that Metroid Prime 4 wasn't at E3 because they wanted everybody to pay attention to Luigi. I don't buy that.
That's why
it
wasn't at
E3. I don't buy it either. Like, there's no way that, like, they had something to show for Metroid Prime 4 after they restarted, like, the entirety of the development. Like, it just doesn't seem, like, plausible to me. Like, that's the excuse. I mean, that being said, like, even if there was something, like, Metroid Prime 4 is still a ways off. Like, I never expected it.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
Who
was?
No, I don't know.
What crazy person actually thought Metroid Prime 4 would make an appearance at E3?
Someone who didn't.
If anything, Metroid appeared,
up.
It would be the Metroid Prime trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a silly story. This quote was from Kensuke Tanabe, and I want to read what he said. The interview is with Eurogamer, so naturally they had someone translate this. He says, I shouldn't say. It's a little tricky. To be completely honest, at this E3, I just want people to pay attention to Luigi. If I mention something about Metroid Prime 4, people will focus on that. But when the time comes, I am so ready to talk about it. When I read that quote, it sounds more the way that I would have anticipated this to go, where he's not saying that Metroid Prime 4 was going to make an appearance. He's just using it as an example.
Yep, that makes a lot more sense in context.
Yeah.
Yeah, and from what I've heard you guys talk about your impressions with Luigi's Mansion 3, it seems like that game really deserves people's attention.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that game's gonna turn a lot of heads when it comes out and maybe surprise a few folks.
I was I might want to play this, and then I tried the demo. I want to own this, yeah.
It's really good. I didn't expect it to be as good as it is.
Go Nintendo!
And it's co-op? I mean, come on.
And it's Luigi. Look at how handsome that boy is.
He is pretty handsome. He's still got the butt, too.
Ooh.
And then one of our last pieces of news here, this comes from Nintendo Metaforce magazine, they had an interview with Studio MDHR, the team behind Cuphead. They said that they'd love to do a sprawling Zelda title brought to life in a doting 2D hand-animated style. Think of all the expressiveness and life you could bring to the tribes, people, and enemies of a universe that rich. And much like Cuphead, we would get to test our design metal, coming up with screen-filling bosses of an entirely different nature. Of course, backgrounds would be completely hand-painted with nothing reused. The list just goes on and on. It would be an absolute dream come true. I am kind of on board for this to happen. Gotta be honest.
Me too. But that does,
yeah, it
that kinda
has
kinda
me
like
a little bit giddy.
Hey, can we borrow that Zelda property next? Can we be next, please, Nintendo, please?
My turn.
Is it our turn yet?
I mean, even if they did like a remake of Zelda 2, or maybe a reimagining, kind of like Metroid 2 Samus Returns.
I think that would actually be the best game for something like that.
Yeah, it's that 2D side-scrolling action. They could reinvent some of the boss designs to kind of fit that vision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can really do whatever they want with it, since the last time we saw that game was on an 8-bit sprite sheet, you know? Like, there's so much room to reimagine what that game could look like today in that art direction, or that art style. So I'm super into that. I hope that quote grabs the attention of someone over at Nintendo who's got power over this kind of stuff, and they hand the property over.
Yeah, maybe Nintendo's on this thing where they're like, okay, we need at least like one Zelda title a year, right? Mm-hmm. And so they just kind of like every once in a while just throw it out to another developer, do a smaller like spin-off title of sorts, or a remake. Obviously, like this year we're getting Link's Awakening, we got Cadence of Hyrule. So I mean, we're already like at two for this year.
Wow, and they've been kind of they've been keeping this up too since development on Zelda U began, or Breath of the Wild.
Zelda
like,
U.
A long time since I called it that. Yeah. Woo wee. I didn't even play it on Wii U in the end. Yeah, so like they've been kind of on this cycle of, like Logan said, almost yearly releases with Zelda games. We had Wind Waker HD, Twilight Princess HD, Triforce Heroes, A Link Between Worlds, Hyrule Warriors, Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition. They've really been keeping Zelda in the public eye, and I kind of like that, because not every game is like a heavy-hitting mainline Legend of Zelda game. Some of them are remakes, some of them are spin-offs, some of them are spin-offs from other developers, and it really helps fill the Zelda space out. And
They're all good games.
Yeah. Oh, and they are all good games, too. That's another good thing. Unless you're one of the people who hates on Triforce Heroes, in which case we can't be friends. I will vehemently defend that game until I die. I definitely think this could happen, especially with the track record of some of these developers. Like Cuphead is phenomenal. It's a phenomenon, actually. And with Cadence of Hyrule being so good, I think that they're starting to have more trust in smaller developers, and I think overall that's just going to be good for Nintendo fans and the industry. Speaking of Cadence of Hyrule, I do want to talk about that a little bit before we wrap up, because I played a lot of that game.
What do you think of that game? You haven't shared your thoughts with me at all.
I beat it. I loved it. It does play like Crypt of the NecroDancer, where it's, you know, the beat-focused movement, rhythm, attack patterns, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's not as randomly generated as Crypt of the NecroDancer is. You do have the map of Hyrule. That is randomly generated, but your mission is to collect the four instruments, go to Hyrule Castle, and, you know...
Shred,
basically, yeah. the actual dungeons, where you find the instruments and do the boss battles, those are kind of based out of Crypt of the NecroDancer, and you do a few floors that are, like, designed around the way that game was built. But the overworld, you traverse using the methodology of Crypt of the NecroDancer, but it is very much The Legend of Zelda, where there are puzzles and enemies to fight, caves to explore, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's
so, if you're a breadstick and you ain't got rhythm, how is this game?
There are actually options for people who are breadsticks. so you can turn off the rhythm-based movement and switch it to a mode that lets you move of your own free will, but it kind of works like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, where whenever you move is when the enemies will move. So if I move up, that's when the enemies will take their turn. If I attack, enemies are going to move. So every time you make an action of any kind, the enemies will move.
Okay, I'm kind of into that.
That said, in the rhythm version of the game, there's a indicator on the bottom of the screen where these lines will scroll across the screen across a piece of the Triforce. Whenever it intersects with the Triforce, if you move or attack during that time, you're on beat. So like, there's a visual indicator there too if you need the extra help.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't played a ton, but it's pretty forgiving. Like, it's not that hard to stay on beat. Like, even as like a musician, like I'll mess it up every once in a while, but it's really not that big of an issue. That being said, I have not gotten very far. I die a lot, and I'm like, nope, okay, I'm going to go play some other puzzle game, you know?
Kick your butt in the first couple hours. Like, you do have to power up your characters, kind of find some items, and kind of get your footing. But once you've done that, like, I played it co-op with Michaela, and after the first dungeon, I don't think we died again until the very end of the game. But we died a whole lot on the way there. to the first dungeon. Yeah. Oh, also, yeah, you can play it co-op, and I would highly advise you do it that way. It's a lot of fun. So there's three playable characters. You can play as Cadence from Crypt of the Necrodancer, you can play as Link, and you can play as Zelda. And Cadence and Link kind of have the same moveset, but Link and Zelda, or Zelda kind of has her own thing going on, where she can use some magic abilities like Din's Fire and Nehru's Love instead of a sword and shield. And that's pretty cool. So, like, I would be, like, on the front lines with Link attacking enemies, and Michaela would be behind me using Din's Fire from a distance to do, like, that extra damage. And it was a really good experience. I'm super glad that the Crypt of the Necrodancer team got a chance to try this out, because I think it was very successful, and I hope that there's some DLC down the line, because I'd love to play more.
Well, I'm interested in giving it a shot now.
Friend of the show, C Average, has been speed running the game, talking about that quite a bit in the Discord. He's under an hour right now on his runtime.
Well, then.
Pretty good. Definitely better than mine.
I think his first run took him 15 hours, he said.
Well, he brought that down quite a bit then.
I'm a little surprised, though, because my first run took me 3.5.
He's probably playing around with stuff, trying to, like, find that, the methods, you know?
The strats.
Yep.
Yeah, so if you haven't picked up Crypt of the Necrodancer, or if you've played it and it's a little too hard, maybe at first, keep giving it a shot. You'll get over the hump and you'll find a really special experience in it.
Oh, you're a real special experience.
Well, thank you. Also, it goes without saying, but the music's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I would hope so. Mm-hmm.
I booted it up, and that, like, title screen music was, like, so bumping. Yeah. I was like, I'm so excited to play this. And then I got into it, and I got murdered.
The guitar is actually done by Family Jewels over on YouTube. I watch a few of his videos, so it was kind of cool to see him there. And his girlfriend does some of the female vocals in the game. So it's kind of cool that the community of people who do these kinds of covers for, you know, Nintendo games got to be part of an official one. This is a very different Nintendo we're dealing with in the year 2019.
I'm into it.
Yeah, me too. So, yeah, Cadence of Hyrule, great. Super Mario Maker 2, great.
Other than that, me, great.
Kind of a slow news week, but other than that, there's still a lot of stuff to talk about, so I'm glad we got to sit here and do it, because it's been a while since the three of us have been together. It's nice to have this.
We got the family back together.
Woo! But
no, Daddy's not leaving.
As much as we love being together, we also have to depart, and we're getting close to that hour mark, so, and I think we're out of things to talk about, so I think it's time to wrap up today's show.
I mean, we could probably find a few things, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, like Cadence of Hyrule, I almost forgot about it. I'm glad Logan brought it up, because I was like, oh, I should probably talk about that. We also never did talk about the Pokemon Direct from a few weeks ago, and I'm going to guess at this point this is probably never going to happen, so we'll talk about Pokemon as it gets closer to launch.
We played it. That's close enough.
Yeah. Oh, and I'll start uploading the videos from E3 on Sunday, so we'll get all our gameplay demos, and then I'll probably do some secondary videos where I maybe commentate over them and give you a little insight onto how we feel about them.
Just the most important commentary you can do is for Pokemon and say that was not supposed to happen.
Yeah,
that'll make sense when you guys see the gameplay.
Honestly, that might be one of our more exclusive videos that we got, because we're gonna be like one of the only people who has that happening on camera. You guys will know when the video goes up. So with that, yeah, that's episode 45 of Nintendo Stuff. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you are a patron or a channel member of the Break Room Arcade, you can be here during the live streamed versions of these podcasts. Otherwise, if you're listening on a podcast source, you can find us on Anchor or any other podcast source you listen to, such as Apple Podcasts or Google Play. Make sure to go on to Apple Podcasts and rate our show. We'd really appreciate it if you did. And if you listen to us on Anchor, if you like our show and follow us, we'd also appreciate that. All of it helps. So thank you guys so much. I know a lot of you tuned in on Anchor for the E3 predictions episode we did with Roger's Base. It's so funny looking at our analytics. The other ones are just kind of low, and there's just one that's just boom, way up here. So I know you guys are listening. We have people listening all over the world. I checked our analytics, and we have listeners everywhere. There's listeners in France. It's United States, and in second place is France. I don't know why, but thank you.
Thank you, France. We love you.
Huge portion of our listenership is in France. It's kind of crazy. We also have one in the Netherlands. I already know. I'm pretty sure I know. Just know who that is. Shout outs to you, Darksflame. if you
want
to
me, thank you.
Oh, Paul, you're in the Netherlands? I had no idea.
Where do you think they make
How
the Amiibo?
The
where do you think the Amiibo factory
at,
is?
Are you in the Netherlands too, minutes. Logan?
I guess so.
Are you not in the Netherlands, Brandon?
I guess I should walk across the street and go visit the Netherlands. say hi to Nintendon for me. Anyway, if you want to keep up with the conversation, make sure to follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at Babababs, follow Paul at Gunnysaurus, or follow Logan at LoggyDoves. You can follow us as a collective at Breakroom Arcade. You'll get all our updates on what we're doing over there. If you want to keep the conversation going even more, we have a Discord server. If you join our Discord server, link in the description, you can get involved with us. You can get involved with all of our fans. It's just a really fun community space. In addition to that, you can play games with people there. We love talking about and playing games over in the Discord server. Lots of Smash matches. I know people have been playing Crash Team Racing. There's been Mario Kart tournaments we've done in the past. So make sure if you want to get involved, join our Discord server to do all that fun stuff. And like and comment on this video if you haven't yet. We really appreciate it. And subscribe to the YouTube channel. Thanks so much. I'll probably stream some Super Mario Maker 2 starting this week. Actually, I'll just talk about that right now. I'm going to have a stream schedule every Monday and Wednesday from 7 to 9 Central Time. I'll be streaming both on YouTube and on Twitch. So if you want to be there for the shows, that's when you have to do it. Logan, I know, is planning to do some Tuesday and Thursday streams. The times on that are a little bit varied because of his work schedule, but keep in mind he will be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, this week is okay because I literally don't work at all. So,
you're going to just nonstop just stream
to,
all week.
I have to actually keep a schedule.
I'm cooking up a video too. I have no timeline for it. I'm just working on it when I actually have free time.
I feel you, man. In addition to the streams, we'll have highlights of those streams being uploaded to our YouTube channel weekly. Ooh. So look forward to that. I'm happy to have so much stuff to announce for you guys because there's some stuff I really want to do, some stuff we really want to do that will become more feasible the more work we get done. So help us out, guys. Like, share the videos, tell your friends, help
parents.
Us. Support us on Patreon. That'll help too. Anything you can help do, us. We'd appreciate
pet
it.
Pet a dog.
Pet a dog. If you pet a dog for us, we will go full time.
Tweet us the dog. Take a picture while you pet the dog and tweet us.
Hashtag breakroom dog. All right, I'm ending this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week for Nintendo Stuff episode 46. Don't break your backs. Break in the games. But for now, break time is over.